This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
We're still in the middle of this Mishnah, and since what I'm going to explain about the Mishnah today has a very, very strong relevance to the Parsha, I'm going to combine the two. We're on the Mishnah that says, Kol Shemaisov Mirubi Michochmoso. Is chachmaso miskayemes. Someone whose deeds are more than his wisdom, so his wisdom will remain. So we've given quite a few different explanations of what that means. The last one we spoke about was a person who commits himself to do whatever he will learn, even if he doesn't know what it is now, but he's committed. So it's as if he did it already. The commitment itself is considered like he's done what he's committed to do. And then your deeds can be more than your wisdom. You don't know yet what to do. But since you're committed to it, it's as if you did it. So you know you're doing more than you know.
So isn't that Naaseh v'Nishma?
That, yes. I think we even mentioned that last week, that is what Naaseh v'Nishma is. Right? I'll do, and I will accept to do whatever I'll hear from now on. This concept, though, of accepting to do what you learn, okay? We also said that someone who learns and doesn't fulfill what he learns is better he shouldn't learn it. Better he shouldn't been created. Because the purpose of learning is to do what you learn. However, people are not tzaddikim gemurim. We're all human beings. And sometimes learning what to do takes time. Can't learn everything in a second. And also fulfilling what you know also takes time. I'm committed to do it, but that doesn't mean that I can do it right now. Sometimes it's a process. I'm committed to do it, but I have to get able to be able to do it, right? If we'd all be tzaddikim gemurim and do everything perfectly, so that'd be very nice. But we're imperfect, all of us, and we need to reach perfection. And sometimes that takes time. So a person, in order to fulfill this, and this is what we're going to speak about most of the time today, and it really has to do with this week's Sedra, so we'll relate it to the Sedra very much, is the fact that a person always has to aspire towards greater and greater improvement in every area of Torah. For that matter, every area of life, because every area of life is Torah. Torah deals with every area of life. This idea is called she'ifa. She'ifa means aspiration. She'ifa really means to aspire, means to breathe in. Lishof, right? Lishof is to breathe out. Lishof is to breathe in. But when you breathe in, you're aspiring. And aspiration means that you look forward towards improving and raising your level, right? That's an extremely important thing. How do we know that? Let's start with a Medrash, and then we'll apply it to this week's Sedra. The Medrash says like this, Rabbi Akiva was giving a drasha, and his students began to fall asleep. Nothing has changed in 2,000 years. And Rabbi Akiva wanted to wake them up. So he said the following, what did Esther see that enabled her to rule over 127 provinces? Let Esther, the great-great-granddaughter of Sarah, who lived 127 years, rule over 127 provinces. So they all woke up. What in the world is there any connection between Sarah's 127 years and Esther's 127 Medinos, except it's the same number? So that woke them up. Says the Michtam Eliyahu, it's unreasonable to think that Rabbi Akiva just said something astounding which made no sense to wake them up. There must have been a message here. And he says the following. Rabbi Akiva reasoned that the reason his students were not paying attention and they were going to sleep is because he was discussing ideas that were way beyond them, way above their head, not on their level. Not that they couldn't understand it, but it was above their level. So they reasoned the following. Why should we listen to this? This is above our level. Better we should get a good rest now, so when Rabbi Akiva comes down to our level, we'll be well rested and be able to listen. But there's no purpose for us to listen to things that are beyond our level. Rabbi Akiva said, you're making a tremendous mistake. He said, you know what enabled Esther to have the power to rule over 127 Medinos? Because she aspired to be like Sarah, who lived 127 years. What does that mean? Sarah didn't just have 127 years pass over her. But Chazal say, all 127 years, kulam shavim letova, they all were equally for the good. That does not mean that Sarah Imenu had a life where every day was equally good. It's not true. 90 years she was barren, 37 years she had Yitzchak, wasn't the same, wasn't equally good. The days she was dragged to Paro and Avimelech were not equally good to the day they celebrated Yitzchak's bris. But it doesn't say they were equally good. It says they were equally for the good. Sarah Imenu ruled over every moment of her life and directed it towards the good. You can't control the situations that come to you in life, but you can control how you react to them, how you deal with them, how you use them. Sarah was able to take every moment of life, good, bad, or indifferent, and use it letova for good. And good doesn't only mean that it was something positive. Good means eternity. How do I know that? Because in the beginning of Bereshis, Torah says that God saw everything saw what he created was good. Right? God said, let there be fish. Then it says, Vayara Elohim ki tov, he saw it was good. So in first grade, you were allowed to understand that the following way. God said, let there be fish. And then it was fish. He looked at it. He said, not bad. It looks like fish. You did a pretty good job. That's absurd. God knew exactly what he was creating. He didn't have to look to see if it was good. So what does it mean? Says the Ramban, God creates things in our terminology by willing them into being. He speaks, hu amar vayei. He speaks and it appears. He creates things by willing them into being. Now the thing exists. What gives it the power to continue to exist? He looks at it. Just like when God wills it, it exists. He looks at it and gives it the ability now to continue to exist. Vayara Elohim ki tov. Tov means something substantial. That's why it's good. Olam Haba is called Yom Shekulo Tov. It's eternal. Tov is something that can continue to exist, that's substantial, and the more it can continue to exist, the more substantial it is. So Tov always represents Torah, is Ein Tov Ela Torah. The ultimate Tov is Torah because it is eternal. The only thing in creation that the word Tov is used directly with is the light. Vayar Elohim es Haor ki Tov. It mentions the light and it says ki Tov. Everything else just says it indirectly. God saw it was good. Pronoun. Doesn't say that thing. Because the only thing in creation that's eternal is that light. That was for the beginning. That the spiritual light is eternal. Everything else is physical and it's not necessarily eternal. See, it has an eternal purpose, but it itself may not be eternal because it's a physical thing and may not exist when the world becomes totally spiritual. One more proof to this idea that Tov means something that can continue to exist, right? That has a substantial existence is the following. It says that after Moshe Rabbeinu was born, so Vatireu Kitov, she saw he was good, and she therefore hid him for 3 months. Now we know that she hid him for 3 months because she was afraid that the Egyptians would come, and they would find him and they'd drown him. So her hiding him was to save his life. So what is that connected to that she saw he was good? What does that mean? It's simple meaning. She saw he was a good little kid, so she hid him for 3 months. But if he had been a brat, right, she would have, what, drowned him? Come get him, drown the kid. But what does it have to do with she saw he was good, and therefore she hid him for 3 months? Says the Rashbam, I think this is what the Rashbam says. If it's not, then I'm saying it. Okay, but I think the Rashbam says this. Moshe Rabbeinu was born premature, 3 months premature. Usually, a preemie like that, especially in those days, didn't survive. Okay, they didn't have pagiot, right, with the modern medical means of keeping a three-month preemie alive. So he had chances of not surviving. Now, hiding a child and preempting Paro's decree of drowning Jewish male children was probably punishable by death. The Nazis did. They prohibited Jewish women from getting pregnant. They found a pregnant woman. They executed her and the baby. And the family, too. Not just the baby. The whole family was killed for going against Paro's decree. So that means hiding a baby put the whole family in danger. So Yocheved said the following: if this baby doesn't have a chance to survive, I'm not allowed to put my family in danger for the sake of a baby who's not going to survive anyway. But Vatireo Kitov, she saw that he was substantial, that even though he was born 3 months premature, he was a viable baby, and he was going to survive. Therefore, she had the right to hide him and put the family in danger, in a doubtful danger, because this kid, if she didn't hide him, was going to be drowned for sure. So that's what it means, Tov. That's right. Hodu Lashem ki tov ki liolam chasdo. God is good because he's eternal. That's what tov means. Sara Imenu didn't have a life where every second was equally good, but she used it for the good. That's Malchus. Malchus, the Shurei Das explains, Malchus is royalty, is not determined by how many people you can boss around, how many people you rule over. Because you can rule over a lot of people and not be a melech, but be an eved. He brings an example. He said the last Tsar Nikolai of Russia, was so afraid of being assassinated, which in the end he was, right, that he never slept in the same room at night for more than 15 minutes. Every 15 minutes he had his guards wake him up and move to another room so the assassins couldn't find him. That's a king. That's a slave, even though he ruled over millions of people. What's it called? Malchus, royalty, is how you can rule over yourself, how you can control your passions and rule over yourself and rule over how you react to situations in life and use them for the good, use them for eternity. So Esther always aspired to be like Sarah, to have that character, that trait of royalty, of control. She never reached the level of Sarah. But because she aspired towards greatness, at least she reached the level of Esther. That's what it means. So too said Rabbi Akiva, you think that listening to levels beyond you is not no purpose to it. It's not true. Because if you don't aspire towards the highest levels, you'll never reach your own potential. So it's worth your while to stay awake and listen to these, what's it called, these high levels, because then you'll be able to reach at least your potential. That is the concept of she'ifa, of aspiration. Because Esther aspired to be like Sarah, she was able at least to bring out her potential. My Rosh Yeshiva of Gifter explained various Gemaras in the same way. Said you can ask the same question, give the same answer. For instance, the Gemara says, "Harotza lahachkim yadrim." If you want to be wise, so one of the segulas to be wise, aside from learning, right, is when you daven, face towards the south. Not completely. You have to face towards the Mikdash. Most of the time, that's eastward in Chutz Laretz. But meaning, go a little bit towards the southeast. Why? Because the menorah was in the south, in the Mishkan, and in the Beis HaMikdash, and the menorah was a symbol of wisdom. So the south is a symbol of wisdom. It's a skula for wisdom. So if you face the south when you're daven, right, you'll be a chacham. It's a schooler to be a chacham. So Shiva said, the Gemara never speaks verbosely. It always says things in the most concise way. Why don't you just say, Hayadrim Yachim? If you daven to the south, you'll be a chacham. Why do you have to say, whoever wants to be a chacham, daven to the south? Just tell me, if you daven to the south, you'll be a chacham. He said, no. If you don't want to be a chacham, you don't aspire to it, you can daven to the south 1,000 times a day, you'll never be a chacham. Everything starts with an aspiration, with a desire. You have to want to be a chacham. Then you can do things that will make you a chacham. But if you don't want to be a chacham, you don't aspire to anything, then nothing's going to help. You're never going to be a chacham. So that is the idea of aspiration. In last week's Sedra, we find that Esav comes in, finds out his brother took his brachas, and he says to Yitzchak, you must have something left, give me a bracha too. And Yitzchak said, I gave him everything. And Esav begins to cry bitterly. And then Yitzchak gives him a slew of blessings that we're suffering from till today. So the Chacham, the Bali Musar asked, where did those brachas come from? 2 minutes before, he said, I gave him everything. All of a sudden, he found in his back pocket a whole slew of brachas. He said, when Esav cried, and he wanted those brachas so badly, his aspiration for the brachas created new bracha. Not only can you achieve your potential if you aspire enough to something, if you want it enough, you can create new potential. That also is possible. So that is the concept of aspiration, right? And that's why a person has to say, Masai Yagiu Maisai, the Maisai Avosai Avram the Yitzchak. When will my deeds reach the deeds of Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov? Do we ever think we're going to reach that level? No, but if you don't aspire towards the highest level, you'll never reach your own potential. With that, I want to explain some things from this Sedra. Few things from the Sedra. First, Yaakov Avinu passes by the Makom HaMikdash on his way to Haran, and he forgets to daven there. He forgets that this is the place that Avram, where the Akedah was, this is the place where his father davened. He should daven there. He forgets, goes. He almost gets to Haran, and he remembers, I passed by the Makom HaMikdash, I didn't daven. So God either makes him able to go back in the twinkling of an eye, or he brings the Makom HaMikdash to him, one of the two, Kvitzas HaDerech, and he goes and davens there. God doesn't like to do miracles if he can avoid them. He likes to do things the way that he originally created them. Why didn't the Rabban Shem remind Yaakov as he was passing by, Yaakov, this is the Makom HaMikdash, why don't you go daven? Why did he wait till he got almost to Haran, remembered that he forgot, and then have to move mountains for him? Why? Based on what we said, if you don't aspire towards something, then nothing's going to help. Until Yaakov Avinu felt that aspiration, I really should have davened, I want to daven, by the Makom HaMikdash, his davening by the Makom HaMikdash would have been of no consequence. So until he wanted, he had that aspiration, then God's willing to move mountains. Without that aspiration, he didn't, it wasn't worth reminding him. Yet if you have a strong will for something, and then you fulfill it, then the fulfillment is substantial. Another thing from the Sedra, we see this in the beginning. It says, Vayetze Yaakov Beersheva, Vayelech Harana. The Torah didn't have to tell me that Yaakov left Beersheva, and he went to Haran. It's redundant. Just tell me Yaakov went to Haran. We know in last week's Sedra, he was in Beersheba. You can't be in two places at the same time. So if he went to Haran, he must have left Beersheba. It's understood. Why did the Torah have to say it? Says Rashi, Malamed Shaziva Sadik Minamakam Osaroshim. When a Sadik leaves a place, it makes an impression. Because as long as the Sadik is in the city, Hu Ziva, Hu Hoda, Hu Hadara. He's the light and the glory and the beauty of the city. And the Maral explains, what is this? Light is, he enlightens the city with his wisdom. And he beautifies the city with mitzvahs. And he glorifies a city with good character traits. Azov Sadik Minoir, when the Sadik leaves the city, Yotza Pana Ziva, Hapana Hoda, Pana, all of that leaves with him. It always bothered me. Rashi says when the Tzaddik leaves a city, it makes an impression. That's not what he described. He described taking away an impression. Making an impression seems to be something substantial. The Tzaddik, when he leaves, makes an impression. What he should have said, it takes away an impression. Right? It's something negative. It takes away the beauty and the enlightenment or whatever. It doesn't make an impression. So what does Rashi say? Osa Roshim. Makes an impression. He should have said, it takes away an impression. That was there. I was thinking what it means is the following. Before the Tzaddik came to that city, the light, the glory, the beauty wasn't there. But nobody missed it. That was status quo. Then the Tzaddik came to the city and he brought all these things with him. And now he leaves. What are you going to tell me? It goes back to what it was before? No. Because now people appreciate that something's missing. And they have a tremendous aspiration to get it back. That makes an impression. That's something positive. The aspiration of recognizing that something's missing and wanting to regain it is a positive thing. That's next thing is Yaakov Avinu. Here again, we'll use this idea to explain it. Yaakov Avinu didn't sleep for 14 years. That doesn't mean he didn't sleep at all. That's impossible humanly. It says if a person makes a neder not to sleep for 3 days, we tell him go to sleep and we give him malchus. Impossible to remain awake for 3 days. So Yaakov couldn't have remained awake for 14 years. What it means is he was learning Torah, and when he felt tired, he put his head down and fell asleep. And as soon as he woke up, he went to learn again. He never went to bed to go to sleep in 14 years. He slept, but only intermittently. He was basically learning the whole time. And when he couldn't learn anymore because he was fatigued, put his head down, he slept, but never went to bed for 14 years. Now he's running away from Esav, and on the road, he decides he has to go to sleep. Okay, go to sleep. He's looking for rocks to put around his head, right? And that night he had to sleep. In that place he slept, first time in 14 years. Couldn't he wait? He's running away from Esav, right? He was able to stay up for 14 years. He can't stay up one more night till he gets to Lavan's house and get a good night's sleep there. This is not the place to sleep in the middle of the desert, middle of the wilderness. But why did he sleep? And then he had the dream with the angels ascending or whatever. So I want to say the following. Chazal say that before a person dies, his neshama gives a scream that's heard from one end of the earth to the other. So Reb Chaim Volozhiner explains what's a neshama screaming. He said before a person dies, God shows him a split screen. On one side of the screen, he sees what he could have accomplished had he developed all his potential. On the other side of the screen, he sees what he actually accomplished. And when the neshama sees the gulf between the two, it gives a scream that goes from one end of the world to the other. Mi sofa olam v'at sofa. I want to add to that, because the language is a little difficult. It says the scream goes mi sofa olam v'at sofa, from the end of the world to the end. It should have said mi rosha olam v'at sofa, from the beginning of the world to the end. Why does it say from the end to the end? So I was thinking, what it means is the following. There's an argument in the Gemara when it says in the Megillah that Ahasuerus ruled Mehodu v'ad Kush, right, from Hodu to Kush, where were Hodu and Kush? One of them says that Hodu and Kush were at opposite ends of the world, and he ruled from one till the other, and everything in between. The other one says, no, Hodu and Kush are right next to each other. And just like he ruled over Hodu and Kush, which were under his thumb, that's how he ruled the same power over the rest of the world. So the Vilna Gaon asked two questions. First of all, how could you have an argument where Hodu and Kush is? Take a boat and see, Right? Have Israelis tell me, oh, you're going to New York. I have a relative in Los Angeles, if you see him, because they think Los Angeles is right outside New York. So if you're not sure where Los Angeles is, if it's right next to New York or the other end of the country, take out a map and look. Don't sit in the base medrash and argue where Los Angeles or New York is. And secondly, whenever the rabbis argue, we say they're both right. How can they both be right? Either it's at the opposite ends of the world, it's right next to it. Can't both be right. Says the Vilna Gaon, no. The world is a globe. And therefore, any two points are right next to each other and at opposite ends of the world at the same time. How? This building and the building next door are right next to each other, if you go that way. But if you go that way, you're not going to come to that building till you go around the whole world. So they're opposite ends of the world. Everybody agrees that Hodu and Kush were right next to each other if you went from one to the other. If you went away from the other, you're not going to get to the other one until you go around the whole world. So they were talking opposite ends of the world. What's the argument? What's the perspective? Did the Megillah want to tell you the quality of the Achashverosh's rule or the quantity? Which way did he want you to look? But the Messias, the reality is that they're both right next to each other and at opposite ends of the world at the same time, like any two points on the globe. With that, I want to explain this. Misofa olam v'yad sofa. Comes out that on the globe, any point is just a little point. But if you divide it into two and make one side the beginning and the other side the end, it encompasses the whole world. Potential is like that. Everybody is born with points of potential. If you look at that as an end in itself, you never develop it, that's what remains, or nothing. But if you look at it as a beginning and an end, then it encompasses an entire world. Every point of potential encompasses a world. When the neshama sees misofa olam v'yad sofo, that it only looked at everything as an end, not as a beginning and an end, so it never developed its potential. That's what it's screaming about. So, Chazal say also that sleep is 1/60th of death. What does that mean? It doesn't mean if you have 60 people sleeping in a room, a Kohen can't walk in. It doesn't mean if you sleep 60 times, you're gone. None of that. What does it mean? We know that when it comes to kashrus, 1/60th still maintains the identity and is prohibited. If you have 60 times something, a little bit of chazer falls into your soup, if there's 60 times as much kosher as treif, it's okay. It's oversimplified, but that's why. Because something maintains its identity up till 1/60th. After 1/60th, it loses its identity. So that means that sleep and death have something in common. 1/60th is still an identity of sleep. Why? Death is where your physical and spiritual side are separated. Your physical side is buried in the ground. Your spiritual side goes to Gan Eden. Sleep, to a certain degree, your physical side and spiritual side are separated. Not completely, but your spiritual side is more in the spiritual world, and your physical side is down here. They're still connected, but somewhat separated. Similar to death, 1/60th has a concept, a similarity to death. Okay. So he said, before a person dies, he sees this, his potential, and he sees what he could have been and what he actually was. And it's dramatic. When a person sleeps, also, the dreams that you usually have are dreams of what's on your mind. So you see, to a certain degree, when you're dreaming, what your potential is and where you're actually holding. Yaakov said, if I don't have tremendous aspirations, then I'm not going to survive by Lavan. So I've got to go to sleep tonight before I get to Lavan's house and see what's on my mind. If I'm really aspiring towards greatness or not. And what did he dream about? A ladder where the angels are going up, coming down. Right? That's, he dreamt about himself, that he has these tremendous aspirations to improve, to elevate himself. So he knew he could survive by Lavan. In fact, a Balabas years ago told me, his name was Sal Kalchman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. He was a teacher in the public schools. He once made a very nice observation. He said that Yaakov Avinu, when did he decide to go back from Lavan's house after being there for years and years. So he had another dream. He had a dream about the speckled, what's it called, cattle or whatever. So he said like this. He said, Yaakov said, when I came here, I was dreaming about angels. And now I'm dreaming about animals. Time to go home. Right? Obviously, what on my mind is not the same thing. So Yaakov Avinu wanted to know that he was aspiring towards greatness, towards greater things. He was on this ladder, right? With the angels going up and going down, that's a human being. That's his aspirations. And then he knew he could survive. In any case, there's something else, though, that a person has to know, and also relevant to the Sedra. When it comes to aspiring, you have to want, but that's not enough. There's a story that's told, and we'll see there's a medrash in this week's Sedra that echoes that story, or the story echoes the medrash. The story goes like this. There was a person who wanted to be a millionaire, but he realized that if he works his entire life and saves everything, he'll never be a millionaire. The only way that naturally he could become a millionaire is if he won the lottery. So every day, he used to daven at the end of Shemoneh Esrei, three times a day, God, please let me win the lottery. And I promise you, if I win the lottery, half the money I give to charity right off the bat. The other half I will use for good things. So please, God, please let me win the lottery. And every day, three times a day, at the end of Shemoneh Esrei, he begged, cried, please, God, let me win the lottery. This went on for 20 years. After 20 years, the angels came to God, and they said, we can't take this anymore. Every day this guy is begging you, please let me win the lottery. He sounds sincere. God, what would be so terrible if you let him win the lottery? God said, I'd love to let him win the lottery. He never bought a ticket. You can want and want and want, but if you don't buy the ticket, you're not going to win the lottery. And there's a medrash in this week's Sedra that says that. The medrash says, Chalamoseim shel tzadikim, the dreams of tzadikim, hein bashamayim v'hein ba'aretz. They're in the heavens and on the earth. Yaakov Avinu in this week's Sedra dreamt of a ladder whose feet were firmly planted on the ground and its head was in the heavens. So his dream encompassed heaven and earth. The bottom of the ladder on the earth, the top in the heavens. Chalamoseim shel rishoyim, but the dreams of wicked people, lo bashamayim v'lo ba'aretz. They're not in the heavens and not on the earth. Paro dreamt. Later on, Paro dreamt. What would he dream? That he was standing on the Nile. Not in the heavens and not on the earth, on the water. What does it mean? I think it means this. Tzaddikim have the loftiest dreams. They aspire towards the highest level. But they have a program of how to achieve that. They firmly plant their dreams on the ground and a ladder. And you go one rung at a time, right? Then you'll reach your dream. You buy the ticket. You'll maybe win the lottery. If you just want, but you never buy the ticket, you'll never win the lottery. So your dreams have to be in the heavens, the highest aspirations. But you have to put it on the ground, right? Concrete, a ladder, one step at a time. And Rishayim, they have no aspirations, and they have no program. Everything's wishy-washy on the water. So that's one qualification to make the aspirations work. You have to want, but you have to put it into practice too. The second thing is that you have to appreciate what you've accomplished. The Vilna Gaon explains the Pasuk in Mishlei. The Pasuk says, Alev chacham liyamino, v'alev k'sil lishmolo. A wise man's heart's to the right, and a fool is to the left. He says what it means is the following. When you are learning a sefer in Hebrew, what you've learned already is to your right. What you're yet to learn is to your left. The foolish person only looks to the left, how much there is to learn, and he gives up. I'll never learn all this. Closes the book, and that's the end. The wise person also wants to learn more, but every once in a while he looks to the right to see what he's accomplished. And that gives him the encouragement to go on. So you have to aspire towards great levels, but you also have to every once in a while appreciate what you've accomplished. Because if you only look to what you want and what you're not holding by, you get very frustrated. But if you know that I've accomplished something, and that gives you the strength and the incentive to go on. So you have to, in order to aspire towards great things, you have to appreciate also what you've accomplished. You have to every once in a while look to the left, to the right, and see that you've accomplished something. And that gives you the... So you have to be... That we see from Rachel in this week's Edra. Rachel is dying for a child. Okay? And finally God grants her aspiration. She's chalishing for a child, davening, right? Looking forward to having a child. And what does she name this child? Yosef, for two reasons. One is, Osaf Hashem Escher Pasi. God took away my shame. The Rashi says two pshatim there. One, till now people said, I'm not fit to be one of the mothers in Klal Yisrael. And now I'm vindicated. So he took away my shame. The other pshat, Rashi says, is beyond comprehension. Rashi says, until now, whenever I broke a dish in the kitchen or stole a cookie from the cookie jar, people blame me. But now I have a child, I can blame the child. So God took away my shame because I have a child to blame for these things. That's why Rachel wanted a child, because she couldn't take being blamed for breaking dish. I mean, it's beyond belief. That's what Rachel was thinking about. Beyond that, what Jewish mother doesn't take the blame of everything her children does? And she's blaming her kid for what she did? What does it mean? So to answer that simply, I think that Rachel meant the following. Not she was going to blame the child for doing it. It's a newborn is not going to break a dish. What it means the following. Till now, people said, why can't she concentrate on what she's doing? How come she's breaking dishes and stealing cookies? But now, you know what they say? She has a baby. Her mind's on the baby. Probably was up all night. Right? She can't concentrate. And she needs that extra nourishment. So she had to take a cookie because she has to feed the baby. She has to nurse the baby. She needs that koach. They blame the baby. Not that the baby did it. But it gives her an excuse. But that's why Rachel wanted a child. To take away this shame of being blamed for stealing cookies and breaking plates. And then she named him another reason for Yosef. Yosef li Hashem, give me another one. So also, it's not nice. He wants a child. You're begging God, say thank you. Don't say I want another one, right? A teenager, wants something from his parents, begs them, bothers them constantly. Finally, they give it to him. He says, can I have two? What kind of chutzpah is that? Now, the answer is, when it comes to spiritual things, you always have to want more. And Rachel wanted a child, not as a regular mother wants a child. She wanted it to build Klal Yisrael. How do I know? Because in next week's Edra, it says when Rachel was dying in childbirth, probably was hemorrhaging, and the midwife wanted to calm her down so she shouldn't go into shock. If you had to tell a woman who's hemorrhaging and you don't want to go into shock, calm her down, what would you tell her? Don't worry, you're going to pull through. You're going to dance at this child's chasana. Everything's going to be okay. That's what I would say. You know what the midwife told Rachel? Don't worry, it's a boy. I mean, what in the world? The woman's dying. What difference? Boy, girl, giraffe. That's not what's on her mind right now. No, the midwife knew that Rachel wanted a child to build the Jewish people. And if it was a boy, then she brought another shevet. And if it wasn't, then she didn't build Klal Yisrael. It wasn't building another shevet. It was worth dying to bring another shevet into the world. It wasn't worth living if she couldn't bring another shevet. That's the midwife knew that's what was on her mind. She could die peacefully knowing she brought another shevet. But telling her that she'll survive or whatever is not gonna calm her down. When you want something for spiritual reasons, you have to want the most. Yosef is okay to ask for the, but you also have to appreciate the minimum, right? In other words, Rachel said, I want a child for the greatest purpose, therefore I want another one. But I appreciate even the smallest benefit. Because if you don't appreciate the smallest benefit, you'll never have the incentive to go on. You'll always give up hope. So those are some of the conditions that a person needs to be able to really have the right incentive, right, and the right aspirations. This week's Sedra is a Sedra of aspiration, of aspiring towards greater and greater things when it comes to spiritual things. And that's what it means. A person who commits himself so his deeds outnumber his wisdom. But on the other hand, you have to want to do more and more, commit yourself to more and more. At the same time, you have to have a program how to reach it, and you have to appreciate what you accomplish. And it's something that happens slowly. It doesn't happen, what's it called, overnight. It's a slow, slow process.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.